To start a recording, this is commonplace where we record all of our meetings. So, you know, for future, if any of you all want to catch a meeting because you missed one, you can find it all online on our City of Tukwila website. So again, my name is Cynthia Delastrinos-Johnson. I am the chair of the Community Services and Safety Committee. I'm here with Council Member Zaki Dunn and Council Member Deshaun Quinn. We have three items. We are also joined by several guests here tonight and staff from the city. Let me get to my agenda. One second. Everything is digital these days. So we have three items on our agenda tonight. Our first item is about park lease agreements, and I have Stephanie Gardner-Brown from Parks and Rec who could speak to that. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. Thank you. As Cynthia mentioned, I'm here tonight to talk about park lease agreements, and we have four different agreements for properties that are parks in Tukwila, and three of them happen to be through the Tukwila School District, and two of them have expired, and one is about to expire. And what I'm here tonight to talk about is renewing those agreements with the school district. I attached copies of all three and just tried to be really concise in the memo so that way you knew what they were about. All three will be streamlined, so they're 30-year terms, and it will allow us to continue to maintain those parks. It will allow us to continue to perform capital improvements in those parks, and of most importance, it allows us to apply for grants to support further capital improvements and development in those parks. So I'm here tonight just to share this with you, answer any questions that you may have. I can go into more detail. I know you have a full agenda tonight. So I guess if there's any questions, I can just answer those for you and
thank you.
Go from there.
Let's go ahead and do that. Council Member Quinn, do you have any questions?
Oh, just really quick, city attorney review these agreements and make sure we actually can maximize the grant opportunities without any, you know, additional steps. That would be my only question. I'm used to this. It's pretty standard $1 a year for 30 years, and this allows us to do the activity in the parks uninhibited. I just wanted to confirm that that's the case.
That is the case. I worked with the city attorneys on that and also the state recreation and conservation office just to make sure that our lease terms were in line with any granting programs that they have, because they do have some requirements on how long a lease can be. And their minimum was 20 or 25 years, depending on the grant. So these are for 30, and that should cover all of that.
Council Member Edan.
Thank you. I don't have any particular question, but I just, so these are just three parks, and, you know, these parks are not close to the school district, so I'm just trying to kind of like, how do they own these parks that are not close? Like, I just wanted to kind of understand what that, and then parks owned by the school district, or you know, just wanted to kind of get an understanding of how that works. This is my first time going through.
Yeah, I'm a history nerd, and I love the history of Tukwila. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed about this project is just learning about each of the parks and how they came to be. So each of these parks used to be a school in Tukwila. Foster Park was actually the original site of the original school back in the early 1900s. The land was donated by the Fosters, so there's some really cool history there. Riverton and Duwamish Park were both elementary schools in Tukwila at one point as well. And through the course of the years, as the school expanded and the city grew, they found new sites to build and expand their schools, and they didn't want to just give up the land and turn to the city, and the city worked with them throughout the time periods that they were constructing new schools to take them on and turn them into parks. So That's what we've done. Yeah, we've turned them into.
That's really helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'll just chime in too. We do have one other park, and that's Crestview Park. That's where our most popular dog park is. That's owned by the Highline School District, and that lease expires in a couple more years. So we'll be back to work on that one. But these ones right now are just with the school district. We wanted to streamline them. They all will have the same start and end date, and just really clean them up. So that's what I'm here for this evening. I will point out, council member.
I have my comments, but go ahead.
Okay. We are requesting that this goes to the consent agenda on August 16th, so it's actually skipping one meeting, and that's just because the school district is taking it to the school board, and if for some reason there's any issues, there shouldn't be. We've been working very closely with them, but if there is, then we will be able to pull back if we need to.
Yeah, I support this moving forward. I yield back. Thank you.
I'm also in support. I just have a quick question. Will this agreement does Parks and Rec have to go to the school district to ask to make improvements, or this puts it in place so that we don't have to ask?
It puts it in place so that we don't have to ask. We do work with them as partners, though, so if we are going to do any improvements, we do let them know if they're large improvements, but we don't have to ask. We do have the ability to move forward and develop the parks for community use, so they see the value in having them for their students and families, too.
Great. Deshaun, I imagine you're comfortable moving this forward to consent? Okay, great. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on our agenda is an update on school speed zone cameras, and I have Chief Draver who will speak to that issue tonight. I can't hear you. Can other people hear? Nope. Okay.
How about now?
Yes.
All right. Sorry, my son was playing on the computer before me. I'll blame him. Excuse me. So this was meant as a simple update as to where we are, where the schools are out of session right now, but we're already working with the school district and Dr. Hernan on planning for September, which is so short, just, you know, 6-7 weeks away, for us to be prepared for when school goes back into session and make sure that the kids are safe. We have the school speed zone cameras that are installed on 144, so they've been installed. We need to put the signage up to notify people of the actual cameras. And come September 1st or the beginning of September as school starts, we will go live with turning on the cameras and actually start sending out notices to individuals in that area that are violating the speed zone. But the first month is all going to be warnings. After that, come October, we will then go live with full implementation of issuing the infractions. However, prior to any of that, we're going to get communications out, social media on our website. We'll put a post in the Hazelnut exactly the dates at which things will go live. We'll also put into play making sure that everybody is aware of what will happen should you get a ticket and what your options are. We'll make sure that they are fully informed so that for those that may not be able to financially afford a ticket, that we do have the courts and the options that they're providing outside of monetary payment to be able to address someone that might get a ticket. So we will have all of that ready to go come the beginning of school here. In addition to that, one of the things, and I apologize, it was poorly written in the info memo, we have 42nd, which when we did the studies, we did a study of the traffic on the street, but what we didn't do was a study of the actual pedestrian traffic there, so we did it on the vehicles. And we have noticed, and we believe that there's a bigger threat to the students traveling on 42nd, just from the sheer number of students, as well as more students cross the street on 42nd to get to the schools there in the 14400 block. And it would be our request for our council to give consideration to adding on 42nd cameras as well for safety there in front of the schools.
Thank you, Chief. Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions? This is an update, right, Chief?
Just an update, yep.
Okay.
No questions, just assuming the process will be like the last time where we have an opportunity to really discuss it. But also, I know that in the time, with the speed sign and it's capturing data, I know that's still running, and I just make an assumption in COVID, you know, like folks have been driving speed limits, and we're going to have to adjust back to really being responsive to speed limits and the safety piece there. So I don't have any questions. Thank you for the information, and I would just assume if anything new comes up, we'll follow the previous process.
Councilmember Edan?
No questions. Thank you.
One thing I wanted to know whether it was on your radar to, I don't know if this is something that we thought about including in like a future hazelnut, just a notice to say, you know, hey, we are installing speed zone cameras near the schools. You know, this is a program. That's going to start once the schools start, just to give our residents notice that this is taking place.
Yeah. So we're going to use whatever media outlets we can in order to make sure that the community is as well informed as possible, between website, Hazelnut, social media, word of mouth. We will make sure that people are aware of the cameras as well as everything that goes around them and what the intent behind the cameras are.
And would you be able maybe in like the fourth quarter to come back to this committee to just report on the data of like how many citations were given, all of that?
Absolutely.
Great. I don't have any further questions. Hi, David.
Hello, council members.
I think we're good. Chief Drever, thank you so much for the update.
Chief, if I can, council chair, if I can add two more things to this memo, we just wanted to make sure the process. One thing that wasn't in this memo was the council had previously, municipal court had talked about the impact on staffing. And so we will need some authorization from the full council to increase staffing levels to meet the demand of the staffing for these cameras. That was in the earlier memos. It's been a while since we've come back to you, but we'll have to go through the process, as Councilmember Quinn talked about, of coming to the full council. That would be a budget amendment, Councilmember Edan, for the Finance Committee. It would be revenue-backed, and we would give you those updates. But I know that on behalf of our court administrator, she wanted to make sure I told you that. We want to start hiring that person so that when these first warnings come out in September, October, that we have the staff available to handle that. And so I do want to look at that process about how do we get budget authority to go hire our, as we had talked about before, with our municipal court.
Thanks, David.
Okay. And so then the second part is, there is a policy question about 42nd. What I heard is, wanted to summarize what I heard, is come back to the committee with the information on 42nd before we add to the contract, because that would be a contract amendment that the council would authorize. So we'll come back to committee with that contract amendment and information for you as well in a future committee. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Our next agenda item is the Fire Marshal's Office Alternatives. I see Deputy Chief Golden, who are you going to start us off?
I believe so, but Chief Whitworth's on. You want me to take it directly, Chief?
Yeah,
or do you have
to come? Go ahead. Go directly with it. Thank you.
Excellent. And thank you, Chair and Council members. And I'm really excited to have some engaged community members at the CSS. That's awesome. So welcome to them and hi to them. So this comes from a couple different things. The mayor has put together a little committee with the finance director and the fire marshal to look at fire marshal services. And as you know, we were before you talking about a community task force, looking at fire service in general. And so this is the scope of this project is the fire marshal's office. And the fire marshal's office is unique in that, and I say this with loving kindness, a lot of fire chiefs don't understand what happens there. It's one of those things that you go, man, the fire marshal's got it. I support it. I know they do a lot of stuff, but it does get very technical. So we tried to make it very easy to digest, but we do have a lot of staff here available to ask questions. So please feel free to say, okay, can you dig this out a little bit or explain this or tell me what this actually means? We tried to avoid a lot of the jargon. So I'll just jump right into it. The goal is to update you guys on what we are currently doing in the fire marshal's office, what our needs are, and what some of those options are. And in the last 3 weeks, I've been the acting fire chief, where I was in directly supervising the fire marshal's office, and I took that opportunity to go to the fire marshal's office and really dig into that. And just quite frankly, I wanted to start by saying, you know, what we try to do in the fire marshal's office has not been working. It's one of those things where, admittedly we failed, but I want to fail fast and turn a corner and say, okay, this isn't working, but here's some options to get us up to speed. And the nice thing is everything we do in the fire marshal's office is very scalable. It's very, can be directed by what level of service does our community want. And so we hope to show you things that we're required to do, what's mandated, what we should be doing, and then how we can scale that up based on what our community needs are and what we want to do. So on the memo, if you haven't had a chance to read it, we started with the background, and we break the fire marshal's office into four main areas: fire investigations, fire development review services, fire code enforcement, which is the inspections, and then other administrative tasks. And this is kind of a catch-all for like public records, records keeping, Knox boxes or rapid entry system. Those are the boxes we put on businesses where we have a key and we can get into that box and it has a key for that business so we can enter the business without doing damage. And so those are the four categories. Our current fire marshal's office is staffed by a battalion chief who is the fire marshal. He's authorized as the fire marshal. We have two fire captains that are working kind of as deputy fire marshals. And we have a fire project coordinator. And this is a very highly certified, highly trained, highly experienced physician that we've been lucky to have, I think, 24 plus years. And then we have an administrative technician that does all the administrative work, scheduling, kind of the face of the fire marshal's office. So there's five FTEs. Three of those FTEs are represented by IAFF Local 2088, and the other two are Teamsters 718. So the historical financial FMO financials are a little bit different in that the fire marshal's office is one of the rare pieces in the fire service that produces revenue. So our budgeted amount has been between $800,000 and $900,000 over the last 4 years. Actual budget has been between $900,000 and a little over $1 million. And then the revenues, and I want to direct your attention to the revenues on page two. In 2 years ago, the council authorized an update to our fees. And what we did was we brought our fees up to more commensurate with our partners in the area, what everybody else is doing. And that raised our revenues from under 100,000 to 258,000. So that was just bringing our modernizing our fees up to what everybody else is used to paying. But those revenues come out, out of what our actual spend budget, what was budgeted, and our net costs are between $700,000 and $900,000 to run the fire marshal's office as it is. So the currently what we do in the fire marshal's office, did you have a question, Council Member Idan?
So I think I heard you say to run the fire marshal office, and then you said a number. I'm trying to understand what was it, the 907 number?
So to use an actual number, I'll do 2021. We were at actual cost of $1.04 million, and then we had $258,000 in revenues. And so when we took that out, the net cost, so what it cost to run the fire marshal's office, was $782,000. And that's representative over the last 4 years. That's pretty much what it does. And why I think that's important is as we scale up, we have opportunities to scale up the revenue as well. And so some of these things we're asking, and we try to break those out. So we say, if you scale up in this area, here is the expected revenue commensurate with scaling up there. And that once you scale up, that also increases services across the board and builds a bench for the fire marshal's office, because you'll see a lot of the staff is cross-trained. So I hope, did that answer your question on the budget?
Yeah, just to follow up, the revenue piece, is that actually projected, or sometimes it can fluctuate? Or when you talk about scale up, is the more folks we put in, the more we expect to do? Because I don't know if we could forecast that. I'm just asking if we do actually forecast that type of revenue.
Yeah, and I'd ask that we're going to cross that bridge. If I could address that downstream a little bit, I wanted to kind of unpack all the information, and then I'll make sure that we address that. And I did ask the fire marshal to have some really good documents ready to say, if we did this, this is what's expected. And historically, this is actual revenues as well, why we expect it. Is that good with you, Council Member?
That's good with me. Thank you.
Outstanding. So what we found is there's basically four viable options. The first two of them keep it in-house or with Tequila Fire, and would require either keeping status quo for staffing or scaling it up. The first option is uniform and civilian. And when we use those terms, uniform is 2088, IFF Local 2088. Those are people that are trained firefighters. They're also cross-trained in the fire marshal's office. And then civilian staffing, and that's our Teamsters. So we currently use a mix, and option A would be continuing to use that mix. Option B would be going to a full civilian fire marshal's office. And those are both in-house. And now you can distinguish these from option C and D, which would be partnering with one of our neighbors. Option C would be Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority, their fire marshal's office. And that would be a mix of uniform and civilian, similar to what we do now. And option D would be Renton Regional Fire Authority, which is an all civilian model. We're very lucky in where we are geographically that we touch the two most robust fire marshal offices in our zone, Renton and Puget Sound. And I know the whole area have the most robust fire marshal's office. And so I feel that we're lucky that we have these two options before us. To go through the four different areas that the fire marshal office provides, there's fire investigations. And when I used to be fire marshal also down in Valley Regional Fire Authority, and I used to call these schedule bombs, because a fire investigation is unplanned, It comes out of nowhere and it's time sensitive. So I would have a nice schedule for all my inspectors and everybody had their daily plans. And then we'd get a large fire at 4 a.m. and the investigators are out there and their whole day shot. And we have to move around schedules and things like that. So fire investigations are kind of a tough one. They're the schedule bomb, but they're also mandated by RCW. We must figure out origin and cause. And when I say we can contract that piece out or we can do it in-house. Currently, we do it with our own staffing as available, but as we get overran, we have used King County Sheriff's Office, and they do a kind of fee for each one that they'll bill us. We recommend, right now, there's suspicious fires, incendiary fires. You hear the term arson fires, things like that. These are criminal fires that are very important in how we do our investigations, how we manage the scene, and we partner with Tukwila PD, who has been a great partner. It's well supported, and what happens is we determine, hey, we think we might have a criminal fire here. We call in our partner, usually a detective assigned from Tukwila PD, and we manage the criminal fires. There's about 75 of those a year. And those take a full-time investigator usually runs a caseload of about 60 fires, just to give you an idea of how much work Tukwila generates in the criminal fire world. And then there's another 130 minor fires where maybe it's an accidental fire or it's a minor fire, but sometimes these are also suspicious as people that do fire crimes, start with smaller fires, they do a series of fires, they do what's called nuisance fires, and whether we investigate these or not is also a service level or a policy decision. Moving on to fire development review services, this is basically when you build in our city, and we like people to come and build things, we have the fire code, and it mimics the building code in a lot of ways. But what our responsibility is to look over what fire code issues are there, fire suppression systems, fire alarm systems, your sprinkler systems. And we do plan reviews. We look at land use. We look at access. And then we send, we approve the plans, and then we send inspectors out to make sure that, like, the pipes were put in properly. And the contractor waits for us to get that done so they can put the sheetrock up and finish it. Then we re-inspect the finish and so on and so forth. And so this is very important. This is a very time sensitive. Not having the staff to do that holds up development. And what you see a lot of developers interested come in, they'll meet with a fire marshal and say, what's your backlog? What's your turnaround time? What's your capacity? I'm thinking of building X. And so we really want to, if we make some promises, we want to back those up, and we want those to be timely. We want our turnaround times to be short because we want to attract development. That's the direction we've been given. And so if the council still feels that way, this is an area that needs to be taken care of. And right now we are really focusing a lot on this area with our limited resources, just because this did not slow down during COVID. Development just marched right along. It was kind of an anomaly, and it was very much not expected. Moving further on, fire code enforcement services. Now, these are your inspections where there's two levels. There's the folks on the fire engines do a company level inspection. It's almost like a low level visit. We do low hazard buildings. We usually meet with a building owner, develop a relationship, say, hey, if you guys have an aid call or a fire, we're the ones that come out. We find out what they're doing, and we just do like a safety inspection, and it's on low hazards. There's most places offer these for free, and this is a program that our companies can go, hey, I saw something of interest, or this concerned me, and they'll report that up to the fire marshal's office for follow-up. And that brings us to our second level of inspection, which is done by certified fire inspectors. They understand the code. They know how to do the calculations for hazardous materials, storage requirements, so on and so forth. We have about 2,500 occupancies that we'd want certified inspections of. And I want to distinguish the language I'm using. An occupancy is different from a building. For example, in Tukwila, we have a lot of a building with three or four businesses in it. So those four businesses we call occupancies, and they might do very different things. A law firm has very different materials and needs than a paint store. And so occupancies, that one building would have four inspections, four occupancies. So there's about 2,500 of these occupancies that we'd want to get in and inspect. And of those, as we inspect, it would generate follow-up. And, you know, when we offer corrections, we need to follow that up and make sure they do it. Or sometimes we ask them to have a third party, you know, figure out their needs to properly store a product, and that it'll generate more work. These are the inspections that there is a fee. It's common to pay a fee. And if a business does something like hazardous materials, we have what's called an operational permit. And what that permit is, it's basically the vehicle for them to pay for an inspector to come spend the time at their business to look into their hazardous materials. All operational permits are for inherently dangerous activities. That sounds super scary, but what it is like, we don't want a tire store stacking tires 10 high. The fire load is too much, a sprinkler system can't handle it, and it'd make a terrible fire. That's an inherently dangerous thing, storing tires, but you know, it's not really that scary to the layperson. But this is stuff that we need to go in, we give them an operational permit, tell them how to store the tires, and they offset our costs by paying a fee for that. This is something that we stopped doing back in 2014, 2015. We do not do these type of inspections. We do not offer the services. And it's an area that that drew my attention. A lot of businesses have several buildings throughout the valley. And that we'll have business owners going, hey, you know, I'm doing my operational permits down there in Auburn and Kent. Where do you guys need me to send this? And, you know, we don't do that service right now. It was something that was scaled back and actually eliminated. So there's an area of focus that that I hope you'll have some questions and we'll do some follow-up. The last thing is basically the catch-all administrative piece where we do some very important work. Public records requests, they're time sensitive, they're mandated by law to be followed up on. And so we estimate public records 150 to 200 a year. That's a pretty substantial workload. Currently we only have one FTE doing administrative stuff that includes all the scheduling. And to give you an idea, there's some automated processes that Fire Marshal Heyman, we went from kind of the pen and paper to a digital kind of modernized, more technological fire marshal's office, which is common in our area, which is good, but it also, an example is we have a subscription service for a business that has to report their fire alarm and their sprinkler system maintenance program to. And they pay for that and they subscribe to it. And then this company automatically sends us documents, records. And when they are late on their service, they tell us that. And so we're getting a big inflow of, you know, businesses that need follow-up. We need to send an inspector up saying, you need a service, you need to do this service, we need this record. And so we have that system in place, but we don't have the inspectors to follow up on that. So that's an area of concern. Lastly, another important thing I want to point out is our locks box program, and I told you about this earlier, it's the boxes that are on the business where you put a key to your business. We have a key to that box. If you ever lose a key, it's horrific. Because you got to go get everybody's keys out. There's cost of redoing the locks and so on and so forth. I believe that a key was lost several years ago. And of the, there's about 1,000 of these boxes that need to be replaced. There was a budget item for that, but that has not been done. So I think there may be money for this, but there's not the people to follow up. But that is something that needs to be managed from the fire marshal's office in this place of other. So I'll move on to the four options. And basically, the scalability of the options, you'll see that what we're looking for is adding several FTEs. You know, currently from the in-house, we have five. I think for full service to be commensurate with what's going on in the zone, we're going to be at 9 to 10 FTEs. So we're looking at almost doubling the fire marshal's office if we were to do it in-house. How we spool those people up is another issue. It takes time. You know, the more experienced you are at reading plans and doing inspections, the more efficient, the better you are at doing it. And so just bringing in FTEs doesn't fix the problem. We need people brought in with experience, with certification, so on and so forth. So when you look at these four options, and there's the partnering with Puget Sound and Renton will offer quicker fixes in that they will have experienced people, they'll have certified people. And I use the term the bench because it ebbs and flows with development. You get a bunch of development all at once, or you'll get a string of fires, or you'll get things that throw off your schedule. And if you have a deeper bench, enough FTEs, you can kind of push people from one area to another. While guys are out doing an investigation, you have other inspectors that can manage their schedule, just jump in and do their inspections. And it keeps the construction moving. It keeps the people that have scheduled, you know, time for you to come visit at their business. You know, you keep that appointment. And the way that you get that is you just got to have a larger office. Currently, when, you know, right now we have a couple of fires going on, and all of our inspectors were busy with the fires. And it really, you know, admin tech was busy rescheduling all the appointments. And that leads to customer complaints and dissatisfaction. You know, they understand that, you know, we're out on a fire and things like that. But really, especially the contractors where, you know, time is money, it's a big input. So I do have the four options laid out in the memo. I'd rely on the memo. I just want to go over the costs briefly, and then we'll dive into questions because I think we'll flesh out a lot through the question and answer and let staff address that. You'll see on page 10 or page 40 of your packet, it's the last page of the memo, basically what it costs from status quo that has no change in to our budget to option A, which would be a net cost of about $530,000. And this all brings everything to 9 FTEs, these first three options. Option B, all civilian, drops that cost to $30,000, an additional $30,000. Option C, going with Puget Sound, would be an additional $430,000. And then option D with Renton would be a savings of $470,000. But I'd ask for, when you look at this, we'll have the finance director, Vicki Carlson, explain some of that, because I don't think we have real apples to apples with the civilian piece, as everything else has total cost of compensation, meaning what it costs to do this, benefits, everything else. The Renton was a lot fewer FTEs. I'll point out there's only five planned for that. It's an all civilian option, and I don't believe it included benefits, but I'd kick that over to finance director. And lastly, any of these options, I want to make it clear, we are dealing with the IFF Local 2088 and the Teamsters union on this. And so whatever options we do, we fully plan to sit down and under the rules of bargaining, fulfill our obligations there to talk about whatever the options are. And so we do want to make that, make you aware of that. With that, we do have a lot of staff available for questions. I'll just turn it back to the chair for what questions you have and how can we help you.
Thank you, Deputy Chief Golden, for that presentation. I'm going to go ahead and move into council member questions first. I do want to hear from Ben, if you want to speak and say anything actually first.
I appreciate that very much. Can everybody hear me, council members? Okay, great. I'd hate to go 10 minutes into it and you guys can't hear a word, but thank you. First off, man, Deputy Chief Golden did an awesome job. Can you believe he started with Tukwila just a few months ago, 6 months or so? I don't know exactly, but that was an impressive overview of it, and that was a lot of information. So thank you, Chief Golden, for doing that. Also, I want to thank the city administration, the finance director, Vicky, for their help with this on the financials and getting that. But I really appreciate being here in front of you. And I would like to just turn over to the questions versus going through some key points. And I think the questions will help bring up some clarity in what we need to go after today, what we need at the end of this meeting that we only have, 40 minutes left. There's a lot to cover in this. There's a lot of information, as you can see. This document has a lot of information, and it's been a long time coming. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's very important. I take this very seriously. And the fact that I am here with you guys shows that you guys take it seriously, and I appreciate that very much. And I hope I can have an answer to every question you have. If not, I got paper. I got, you know, I can call Lifeline if we need to for today, but I would just turn it back to you.
All right. Thank you. Council Member Quinn.
So I just wanted to start with the process. This is going to go to the committee of the whole, right? I just want to make sure I understand that. We're going to have that comprehensive conversation about what this would mean overall. So maybe my comment is, as it relates to knowing that this is not on the same trajectory as the task force, we got to be really confident with the final numbers and what we can provide. And I go back to Councilmember Don's point around being able to project what's needed, and then also factoring in the economic development that actually comes with this. And there were a couple of things that were brought up in the presentation that I want to note. One, you know, I would say in my experience, public service, the cheapest option is not always the best option because there are considerations. And so for me, at least for right now, and I really, you know, this is a really meaty memo. And so I'd be curious for a couple things, right? I mean, I know that in the end, this will, if you're a resident, this adds into whatever we say we're going to do with the overall fire piece. So we got to kind of get this right and come up with our best recommendations. The mandatory pieces by RCW, and it relates to our liability, is an important consideration of mine and the types of folks that will be asked to do this job. So that is a thought in going into this deliberation that's going to be important. And I know that option B is like in-house and potentially some contracting, and I'm thinking more of the size up pieces in this deliberation here. You know, I think the request was that this piece needed to be carved off, and there was an intent of having a collaborative effort to give us something that we can actually make a decision on. And so I would just ask this question. Do we feel like what's being proposed, or maybe what will be proposed in COW, meets that threshold of collaboration that we've asked since we peeled this off from the broader task force components? And if so, I'd like to actually have that represented in the info memo. So for now, that's where I'm at.
Councilman Quinn, can you clarify your question of do we feel like the collaborative part has taken place? I just want to make sure I understand your question so I can give you an answer from the Fire Marshal's office as well.
Yeah, I mean, ideally it would be a joint response. And then maybe one of the questions I have is I would be interested in kind of the breakdown of the in-house, I think option B, in-house and contracting, what that gives us. Does that give us flexibility to size up if we get a lot of requests? And then we can make adjustments when it's on the low end. And then I go back to this professional requirement, this RCW requirement around liability. And I think maybe that's something that we could talk with the city attorney. So those are the things that are going through my mind. Yeah. As far as what's in front of us.
I'd like to take a stab at that part that you brought up. And I think it's important to, one, I don't want to get in the legal lane as far as the legal requirements. We have great legal counsel that can help with that. And I think if you recall from in 19, when we had the conversation with the Finance Committee, there's a base legal requirement. And then there's also, okay, what's the service that Tukwila wants to provide? And legal, the base requirement might not be the service, the minimum that Tukwila would like to provide to its, you know, its citizens, its residents, and, you know, to the people that come here. One, the legal requirements, I'll save that for legal because that would be immature for me to speak on that. But as far as what either best practices or what our neighbors are doing or what the right thing to do as far as the service and what to provide and how we get there, I think these options, some of these options will get us there in a timely manner and allow it to happen. There's some of these options will be take a lot more time to do and have a lot more struggles with the bargaining units potentially. And again, the decision, that's part of the decision making is, okay, is this effort and this work and this time worth going down this road with the unions that are going to be involved with this? Or is there an alternative option that might not be the cheapest, but also provides the best service that we can, provides a great service to the community, and it allows us to scale it as we need to in a timely manner versus, you know, how long does it take to start up on ourselves, do it ourselves versus contracting with another agency. So I'm here for the fire marshal related questions, the cost. I can explain the cost breakdown on some of these items, what we do. Again, I'm here for a resource, and I want to definitely make sure that we get your questions answered. And as far as timing, there's an urgency in the sense of the fire marshal's options that are on a different time frame as the whole fire department. And it, unfortunately, we are under a time crunch to make some decisions, but the beauty of it is you have a lot of key stakeholders in here that can provide the information to get the things that you need to make a decision, and looking for clear direction on, you know, what next steps that we need to take. And then, you know, as we get into this, unfortunately, there's some clear direction that we need from this committee going to the next level of what we want to do and move forward so we can put our efforts towards getting that information. And there's a lot of effort that was done to get these numbers here. Tukwila does get to say what services they want to provide and, you know, what services and how much. And when there's contract options, you're definitely at the table as far as, hey, we want to provide these, and then we can get you some hard numbers. These are good estimates, but again, without clear direction, there's a lot of effort that goes into making sure it's good and scalable to what services you want to provide. So I'll yield back to you.
One thing that I wanted to just clarify that I think I heard Councilmember Quinn talk about, but correct me if I'm wrong, was something in the memo as to why, like, because I do remember us talking about and approving moving forward separately with the fire marshal's office on certain things versus the timeline of the task force. if there could be something in the memo speaking to the fact that, like, we are addressing this issue, this is why we're addressing it right now, whether it's the time sensitivity, the difference in, you know, what the work that is taking place, if there could be language just to explain, because, you know, as we all know, there are these two effort, there's a task force that's happening right now. We're recruiting members of the community. And I know one of the concerns from the council was that, you know, why are we looking at this issue separately? Why aren't we waiting and going with that process, which is going to take longer? And so I think that's an important piece that we want to make sure is here on the front end. David.
Council Chair and council members, great questions. I think that this really isn't being informed by what type of Councilmember Quinn, you said it right, what process you would like us to move these decisions forward. I think when we first came to you a few months ago, this was led by the CPSM third-party report that the council, per council provisos asked us, and they had a whole section on all services, but especially on fire marshal offices services. And really is to be informed how the council would like us to look at these options is, right now, this memo was meant just for discussion in committee and to hear your questions. And I think it may need a couple rounds in committee just to make sure we've answered your questions or outlined those options. I do want to give our finance director, because she's more intimately involved in the financial health of the city and looking at these revenues and what are the budgets she has, Mayor Ekberg authorized and directed Fire Marshal Ben Heyman and Finance Director Vicki Carlson 2 months ago to start down this process. And I think the one thing I'd also like to mention is that the Fire Advisory Task Force, I think I've heard all three of you talk about being methodical, make sure we bring the community involved. And so that's a question we have for you. Is this information that we want to bring to the community and involved in that process, or is this something that you would like us to take on its own? So that's a open question for the council that we want to hear from you. Make sure that we're meeting your needs. And all of these have financial issues, all of these have community issues, and we want to make sure we do the right thing best for the Tukwila community. But I would like to have Finance Director Vicki Carlson talk about what she knows and what she would suggest on getting better information on some of these things. I think this gives you a wide range of possibilities for us to review.
Sure, thank you. Vicki Carlson, Finance Director. So thank you for the opportunity to just address this particular item. We have been working on this now for a couple months, as City Administrator Klein has mentioned. Before you, you have four viable options for increasing Fire Marshal Office services. And in conversations both internally as well as the chiefs with both Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority as well as the Renton Fire Authority. One of the conversations that we really need to have before we really start talking about the cost is what level of service do we want to provide? The level of service will then dictate the staffing that's required for all of these different options. The numbers that are in the memo right now are very, very high level, and it attempts to provide an apples-to-apples comparison based on staffing levels. But as Chief Heyman mentioned, or maybe it was Chief Golden, if we chose to contract with one of these agencies, there is a depth of staffing available there. And so we might not need a full 9 staff members in order to provide a higher level of service. So I'm hoping we can have a conversation about what level of service do we want to provide on all of these different fire marshal services, which will then dictate the staffing levels and will give us a much more fine-tuned cost to bring forward so that you can, again, make an informed decision on what these different options will cost. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Edan.
First, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's worked on this. This is really great information on this memo. As I was going through the memo, I finished it and I went back, and halfway through, I was kind of thinking, what is really missing? Is there something that's missing that I need to be also considering? What are other things that should be in here? That just, you know, something that came that I wanted to ask. The other thing that I wanted to get a clarification is the memo talks about there's an option where, I don't know if it includes contracting, that we would have our fire marshal office staff will be embedded in their staff. But help me understand that, what, you know, in this numbers, when you look at that, what does that look like? Also, the other thing that I think you mentioned, we have, I believe, three IAFF and then a couple of Teamsters. It just kind of mentions it there, you know, we need to also also think about these unions. And I'm like, you know, what is the cost and what does that look like? And, you know, if I'm going to make, where I sit, if I'm going to make a decision, I want to get a full picture. And I feel like I've been to a couple of processes and how that works, but I don't know what this one will look like when you want to have a couple of staff members that are doing the specific duties and you're asking them to move into another, embedded with another folks. How does that look like and what does that mean in terms of cost? The other thing that that stood out for me is the status quo does not work. You know, if you look at the memo as you begin, Deputy Chief, it talks about how many people are in the fire marshal office, and also talks about what are the four elements that they're responsible for. If you look at some of those elements, there are elements that we cannot do because of we don't have the staff. An example being is just, you know, there's a lot of new developments and also the recurring testing that needs to occur, that needs to take place. We don't have that. So the status quo does not work. The five people that we have, we cannot barely sustain. And I also, you know, I did not glean when I was reading the memo what you talked about in your presentation, the scalability. I thought that was very interesting, and I want to understand that more. The more we, you know, scale it, the higher that it can pay it off. You know, the revenue comes in. So I don't know. Those are the kind of, clarifications or questions that I have. And personally, you know, I know something is not right. I'm really interested in diving into this. This is something that I really enjoy looking at it holistically, where I sit and see, hey, how can we, be a stellar fire marshal office? That's the objective, and I feel like we're not doing that. So I yield back, and I don't know who needs to take some of the questions that I outlined. I yield back. Thank you.
I got a couple. I made some notes, and then I'll kick it to the fire marshal for flesh it out further for you. But I want to start with jump back to the chair's question on the timeline and tell you how we got here and why it's carved out. And again, it's a question for the council. It's something that we felt that we wanted to advise on, that the issues that we're looking at have to do with we're not doing inspections. And when developers are coming in, you know, we feel like there's going to be a nice push, post-COVID of development. And we want to be very competitive and be able to offer, you know, the services, because the council has stated before that we're pro-development. We're interested in that. That being said, we identified that contracting with somebody else, these two offices, the timeline on page 9, you'll see, is like we could get that stood up in about 1 to 3 months. And Fire Marshal Heyman would be the first to tell you that's not going to be turnkey where you hit the ground running. But it's certainly, we could stand it up a lot faster than the task force piece. But getting to what Council Member Quinn was saying, have we done that collaboration? Are we getting that full, you know, community support on this? And I would just say, no. Not that fast. We're not, you know, the task force doing something very different. We probably are trying our best, but, I would love to have something better for you guys, but it's like, nope, we're not. That's a great question. And, But timeline, you know, sometimes if that's a policy thing that the council wants to say, you know, we didn't get enough collaboration, but the time's important. So I'll leave it there, and you guys can follow up if you need to on that. With Councilmember Adam, the Renton option is option C, and the way they do business is different than the rest of the zone. I've worked with their fire marshal for a long time. She is a very good manager.
Option D, Chief, just option D. I want to clarify, point of clarification.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Renton is option D.
That's correct. That's correct.
I'll mute back. Sorry.
But that's a civilian model that's all out of their office. And you can distinguish that from Puget Sound that, believes they already do contract, fire marshal services, and they call it an a la carte type of deal where you tell me what your service level is, but they ask for office space in the city just because you are so tied to development. So, you know, here in DCD, we have the one-stop permitting. We need to have somebody on site, and that's my opinion. But so to distinguish C and D, Renton is everybody's in Renton, and we would commute in to do the inspections and whatnot. Puget Sound would ask for office space and be in-house. And, of course, both the in-house options would stay where they are at 6,300. The costs are still, they are what they are. They're high level in the memo. When you talk about scalability, the real scalability comes from the inspection piece. So you'll see that we do, you know, between 1 and 5 FTEs in this area. And the people that can do inspections are usually cross-trained for fire investigation. And some of them do land use, plan review, utility players. So if you scale this up, and you can look at the little chart, basically, if we wanted to do all our inspections, and when we do these inspections, it comes with some of the inspections are in the fee schedule. So you could say, okay, if we did added one FTE, we would get 540 inspections done. Of those 540, this many would be a $50 base rate. This many would be $50 base rate plus $175 for the operational permit. This many would be $150 base rate or a $50 base rate, excuse me, and $300 operational permit. And you could see that we could start to mock that up for the council and say, if you did this, this is what we'd expect. So I hope that answered your scalability, the cost, and the location piece. With that, I'll turn it over to the fire marshal to fill in his piece.
I just have a quick clarification before.
Sure.
So we have 5 folks in our group now. If we choose either C or D, do we still need to have our staff embedded with this agencies?
I'm sorry, did you go ahead?
I'm curious if we still need to have our staff still work under these agencies to do these functions, or they still can do other duties and we can still have a contract with this, you know, option C or D, whatever option we go to. I'm just trying to see if there's a distinction of, you know, moving our staff to their staff and they provide additional 3 people, and now that equals the nine FTE that's shown.
That's a great question. So the answer with Renton is they will set up their own staff and fulfill their own contract. However, they are interested in our project manager, that one position, because those are very rare to find somebody that certified and experienced. They would want that one employee at the Teamsters, but the other 4 employees they would not want, and they would be reabsorbed into the city somehow. But that's Renton. That's how they do it. Puget Sound would want our entire staff, and the reason why is, like, Fire Marshal Heyman does not have certifications. He doesn't have experience. He's, no offense, he's not particularly valuable in the fire marshal world, but he's very valuable in transferring over, spooling people up, making sure they understand Tequila's needs, but they want to take him, and he would ultimately be replaced. You only need one fire marshal, and Puget Sound and Renton have very experienced fire marshals. There's some benefit to the city as far as having a fire marshal with certifications and experience. And Puget Sound, I believe John Napier, he has a twin brother, Jason, up in Bellingham. I think they're the only two fully certified fire marshals in the state. It's a rare thing. So I didn't mean to knock on Ben there, but so the answer is Puget Sound wants our entire office. But for us from operations, I couldn't really use another battalion chief. I could use the fire captains. But we could certainly look at that through attrition and things like that. And we could flesh that out more if you needed a deeper dive.
So I'll grab the mic here at this point. So the fire marshal is the person that has to make all these ideas or options come to fruition, or is a major part of that. Is my role is whatever decision council makes, I have to be the one that has to move that forward and oversee that. And if you recall, we're part of the training consortium, South King County Fire Training Consortium. And the beauty of that, that's kind of a proof of concept for what we're talking about here. The training consortium has our staff members. They're still Tukwila employees, but they have our staff members. They're overseen by a training chief who puts them in the positions that best serves the customer, which is the fire departments. And there's some limitations to that, that prevents those people to be moving all over the place. But right now, it's a great example of putting the right people in the right positions. Contracting is with, let's say, Puget Sound or Renton, the people that would go over, Puget Sound would take all our staff, would want to utilize all our staff. That's a dynamic thought. It's a scary thought to some people, but it's been proven by what they're doing with the other agencies that they contract with. They contract with other municipalities for fire marshal services. And with the training consortium, it shows, it's important to put the right people in the right spots. And Puget Sound definitely wants to have a presence here in Tukwila, but if we just say, hey, we want to contract with Puget Sound, but we want the Tukwila employees just to stay in Tukwila, and the Puget Sound employees just stay in Puget Sound in their jurisdictions, then we miss the whole opportunity of scaling and working together and having that deeper bench that we don't have at all. And I appreciate that you recognize that we're not doing it now. We're missing the boat now. We're failing. We have great staff. We're supported by great staff in the city, but we are failing. And unfortunately, the wheels are coming off the cart. And, the conversation of, how did we get here? We could have a high level one. I think, if we really want to go deep into how we got here, and that's a conversation for later or an executive session potentially. But I think, how do we get out of here? How do we have a sustainable option to move forward? That's what we need today. And we can't do it without you. And it is a scary thought. And, it takes a lot of trust. It takes a lot of talented people to make it happen. And I would just say, okay, there are certain options that we can get off the ground quicker. And when I said, hey, the fire marshal is the one that has to actually make it happen, we could merge with Puget Sound within just a month or so for status quo. But we could also scale it and start those hiring and what we need to do to get those extra positions in here. We can get those into place quicker than we can if we were to do it on our own. That's once all the negotiations for the impacts with the bargaining units are taking place. So I want to make sure that you hear it from me, the person that would have to oversee it at some point, or that this role would have to oversee it. There's four options. A couple of them are going to be a real struggle. A couple of them are doable, and not everybody's going to love all the options, but I think, there's an option that I'm in support of that I think is the best one moving forward, but there's pluses and minuses. And again, it's not going to be the cheapest, but it's the proof of concept that's already there. And what is going to have the biggest impact to our community and utilizing the talented staff that we have now. But again, I do recognize that it's on a different trajectory or time period than the fire department committee. And I just want to stress the urgency and the you know, at what is the next meeting and when a decision has to be made and different iterations of this memo. I just want to be the you know, maybe the fun sucker in the conversation. Like, hey, I'll tell you what the pros and cons of this is. We need to make a decision soon. Puget Sound and Renton both, they need to know soon. Puget Sound needed to know by July for hiring and for budget reasons. I mean, they all have their own reasons of why we didn't know. So if there's not a clear direction of where we're moving forward with it, it would impact the options that are available. And as far as my position, I'm slated to go back to shift. You know, I would hate to have this, you know, dumped on somebody else's lap, a new fire marshal that gets put in here and starting this conversation over and trying to pick up the pieces. And, you know, there's been a lot of work by a lot of people to move this forward starting in 19. Unfortunately, I'm just here to say, hey, we need a strong decision or a direction soon. And I just want to leave you with that. And I hope that answered your questions, Councilman Edon, a little bit on timing of it all and the numbers. And I'm open for more questions.
Thank you. We're actually out of time tonight, but what I'd like to do is keep this as an agenda item for our next committee meeting, because I still think there are a lot of unanswered questions. I know one question, we could write this down, it's very simple, it's just, where's the backlog? Like, you know, we talked about not being able to meet what our current needs are. I think that's really important. I'd like to see in the next iteration, in addition to some of the other questions asked by my fellow council members, is what are we not doing? What is the current backlog? How many permits are waiting inspection? How many buildings haven't gone through that, like, I don't want the inspection process that probably should be inspected? How many of those buildings, you know, that's the kind of information that I would like to see. I would like this to be at the next memo, as well as I think this is an important thing for us to dig into, and it kind of can be on a parallel track for now until we figure out, you know, where it's going to go. But we put this on a separate track, and I think it should stay here because there is interest in digging deeper into what's going on and figuring out some solutions in a more quicker manner, or just us digging deeper. I want to thank all of you for coming to present this. I wish we had more time, but I know that there are people on here who need a break before our next meeting at 7, including our guests. So I will adjourn this meeting, and just know that what we hope and what we expect is that there's a follow-up to this conversation at the next CSS meeting.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, everyone.